up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway. I woke up
this morning. Lone Wolf, Big Sykes and Jax, time out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 5. NASDAQ futures up 39. We're down a bit last night, but we can't be down. We're making deals in Washington. We're making deals. By the way, Carl, did you get your deal?
Oh, yeah, I got the deal. It's so the 15th, and a couple of weeks ago, I got the deal. It felt like a cactus, and you know where it went.
You got to bring the valise and money and take it to the White House. You didn't sponsor, you know, one of the sponsors, the $1 million dinner, and all of a sudden you got this stuff taken, you know, called tariffs called off on your product?
Now here's the thing. All right, see, there is a basic problem with this paradigm, okay, which is that the size of the cactus was not large enough for me to put $1 million on the table to attempt to reduce its impact on my posterior.
Well, there you go.
So, you know, I mean, it's... Now, if you happen to be Apple, well, you know, okay. I had quite a nice little rant on that over the weekend that I put up on Rumble. If you want to hear a lot of four-letter words, then... you know, especially ocular penetration in the more vernacular term for that. You might want to watch and listen or listen to that. But here's the basic problem when you get down to it. As I've pointed out repeatedly, all this strum and furor about tariffs and things like this, the legitimate argument for doing it is that the basic concept, and I'll use the N-word, I'll say N-word instead of the N-word, because we are in the air. Gee, N's are so great, everybody should own one or two. I thought after this little dust-up that we had in the 1860s, we considered this to be something we weren't going to tolerate in the United States anymore.
The new vernacular is out of sight, out of mind.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, and as I pointed out...
Their problem. These jeans are $20 cheaper.
Well, yeah, or, you know, Lululemon. Now, here's...
By the way, name me out of 10 people you walk by in the street, name me one person who even knows who the Uyghurs are.
Oh, yeah, like none.
None, right? And you know what? If you try and tell them, they don't want to know.
Well, and how about all of the people who bought a Tesla originally because they thought they were saving the planet? Tell them that the whole reason they have the Tesla is because there's a bunch of little black kids over in the DRC who have to dig up the earth in order for them to get the cobalt to make the batteries. And by the way, if they refuse, they'll starve to death, which is why they'll do it. Because that's the only way for them to get food, right? There are no other jobs. So this is... we supposedly got rid of this crap, and yet not really. And then you've got the roughly half of the country, and this is the one that really chaps my butt, you got about half the United States which falsely believes the garbage that's been spewed by the Al Gore contingent of the Democrat Party for the last 30 years, okay? Which is that if we don't stop consuming carbon-based fuels, that the sea will rise and we're all going to die because we're all going to bake to death, okay? Now, you know, supposedly Barack Obama believed this, and you know, he believed it so much that he bought oceanfront property in Hawaii. All right, sea level's going to rise, but by God, I'm going to buy something that's worth millions of dollars and will all of a sudden be worth zero if I'm not full of crap, right? In other words, if this is actually true, I just took all this money and I flushed it down the toilet. Okay.
Easy but, come, easy go.
Well, okay, Chief. Maybe. Okay, maybe.
Just like Jackie Gleason said, easy come, easy go. When I had it, I went with it.
Well, you know, fine and well, except we decided, again, as a nation, that coal, which is extremely cheap, and we have a lot of it, we have it at a 2% population compounded growth rate, right? Which, I mean, you know, anything compounded long enough is trouble, right? At a 2% compounded growth rate, we have enough economically recoverable coal resource to provide electrical power infrastructure in the United States for over 500 years.
Now, amazing how you come across subjects where I always want to ask you a question and then I forget about it. Now do you mind talking about that for a second? Because
oh, no, not at all. My argument has been, since I started digging into this stuff in earnest, when all this started to become like the mainstream thing, right? Is we had to shut all these plants down and bulldoze them, and you know, we all
no, that was that was somewhat part of the deal. It's not the whole deal.
It was, but here's the thing: this set of policy things that we've done, and the EPA did it indirectly. Illegally, by the way, which is now being appropriately challenged through the correct process instead of just executive fiat, which is good because it's going to make it very, very difficult to reverse it, if not impossible. But that comes out of the Chevron deference decision of the Supreme Court and things like this. But here's the basic thing is that the primary problem that burning coal to make electrical power or anything else burning it causes is that there is a trace element in all coal deposits called thorium. It's a heavy metal. It's an alpha emitter, and alpha emitters, if inhaled, cause lung cancer. Okay, so this is real. This is not, you know, this is not tinfoil nonsense. This is a real risk. The nice thing about it is that because it is both it's metallic and it's much heavier than the carbon, way heavier, it's very easy to separate it out as a chemical process, and incidentally it happens to be a usable nuclear fuel, which means that separating it out actually can pay you, all right? So you could actually use it to make electricity, and then you can use the coal to make liquid hydrocarbons. The Germans figured out how to do that in the 1940s. It's how they powered their war machine in World War II. So we have the ability to be energy self-sufficient at a fixed and reasonably predictable cost in the United States for the next 400 or 500 years. And if we did that, then you'd have an idea, you know, because every unit of GDP has a unit of energy behind it. It doesn't matter what you're making. I don't care if you're making leggings for Lululemon, or you're making computer chips, or you're making steel for cars, or aluminum, or whatever. Every single thing that human beings do has energy behind it. You know, we used to do it ourselves, and human hands, and then we used oxen and horses, and then machines. Okay, fine. By the way, somewhere slaves were in there too.
Oh yeah,
but
or you had a bunch of kids you treated as slaves.
Well, same thing. Yeah. Hey, gee, as I have observed repeatedly, the cheapest labor is that which you pay nothing for, right? So if you can find some way to do this, you're always going to be able to outcompete the other guy who can't do that, all right, either because of legal reasons or social reasons or just because people say, I'm not doing that crap. But here we are with all this supply chain stuff over in Asia and everybody and their brother. The number of articles I saw over the weekend saying all these companies are just going to find ways to cross ship and evade the tariffs and go somewhere else where they're not as heavy as they are in China or whatever have you. And my answer is okay. So what you're basically saying is that the imbalance that we have created, this so-called wondrous world that we have in the United States, where we don't actually have to, we don't have to eat our own cooking, so to speak, when it comes to the environment and everything else. The entire thing is predicated upon screwing someone else. It is not predicated upon being better, faster, cheaper. The whole argument is there, and every single media outlet is out there telling us how we have to do this. This is wonderful because if we don't, oh my God, there's going to be a recession.
It's because you're not paying for commercials. These other guys are, but...
Well, I am really tired of, in one breath, telling me that I have to put up with somebody who thinks that being shoved is reason to pull a knife out of a duffel bag and stab a kid in the chest. Okay? And he died, by the way.
Can I get back to my cold questions for you?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's shoot.
Well,
let's do it.
I've known, I'm an expert on it, but when you're in Illinois and you're taking science classes and so forth,
right,
you realize that out of all the states in the country, probably Illinois has more coal reserves than anybody else. But the problem is it's bituminous coal, which is high sulfur,
right,
and nobody wants to really burn that. So the stuff you get from out west, you see the coal unit trains, you still see them.
Right.
Not as many. That's anthracite, correct?
By the way, you know where they're going, right?
Oh,
of course, on the West Coast and being exported to China.
Well, actually, a lot of them are still coming to the Midwest.
Well, but a lot of them are...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think... my point was, in trying to have this for you ready, was that Illinois is actually exporting the coal that nobody wants to burn here overseas. And it turns out they're only exporting maybe a third of it. And there's a couple of plants downstate, Prairie something and somebody else, that actually use it that are supposedly modern coal plants. Now, and on top of that, Chicago had, this is, I don't know the details of it, but it sounds sort of slimy. Chicago had three massive coal-fired facilities here in the city. One was Pilsen, which was like the original one. Someday I'll tell a story about Pilsen and General Electric, how... The thing was so powerful that the outside of the flywheel was going to go faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah.
And General Electric didn't think they could make this thing. And the guy, Sam Insull, the guy who was the original genius but slime bag that ran Commonwealth Edison, said he'd pay for it if it didn't work, which I can't believe he did that, but he did. And part of that thing is still on display at the General Electric headquarters, wherever the hell that is. Anyway, we had three of them here, and this is 5-6 years ago, and everybody wanted them shut down because they were, were pretty dirty. And the deal was, Commonwealth Edison sold them to somebody else, and they just bought the power. They must have known that without their muscle, they were going to get closed down. They didn't want any part of it, so they got the money. Somehow they got the money. Anyway, when they went to tear them down, it was, $140 million to make them modern or tear them down. And somebody made the choice. Now, my question is, the two that are in Illinois that don't even use the cleaner coal, use the dirty coal, and I think are supposedly okay, what's different about them? What do they do differently? I know the one in Indiana here on the lake, it looks like a nuclear plant, but it's not. It's a coal plant. They have this huge tower where, just like they used to do at Pullman, in the paint place at Pullman, there was this massive waterfall with essentially a couple of almost like aircraft engines on one side of the waterfall. When people sprayed paint, they dragged the air through the waterfall. Then all the paint droplets would be caught in the water, and at the end of the day, so this huge thing of sludge in the bottom of the trough.
Right.
And the same thing happens in Indiana. They take water from the lake and they essentially blow the smoke through the water, I believe. Now, what is different about the ones down in Illinois that are, quote, clean enough? I won't say they're clean, but clean enough. How the hell do they do that with bituminous coal? And what was $140 million going to buy you in the Chicago places to make them, quote, clean enough? What's the difference?
Well, it's so basically the issue here is that if we're going to have these standards, then they have to apply across the board to everybody.
Because the ones in Chicago, the one at Pilsen is right in the middle of a huge chunk of people. I mean, it wasn't when it was built.
Well, guess what? Guess what? They're putting 1,000 new ones up in China.
Well, okay, that's China. I'm saying here, it wasn't like it was in, you know, the burbs or someplace. Not that people in the burbs want it there.
Oh, no. Well, Chief, when I was growing up...
Yeah, matter of fact, it was a mile and a half from downtown.
Well, yeah. Look, when I was growing up, there was a coal-fired power plant that was literally on the other side of the river from me. Okay. I mean, and that was the power plant that provided electricity for where I lived, my house. All right. So, I mean, now all that's there today, I think all the coal boilers have been shut down. They've got some natural gas turbines there that they use as peaking stuff. But there was another one across the river in the other direction. That was a municipal power plant for a city, and it provided all of the, and it was coal-fired, and provided all of the power for that small city.
Well, these areas here, they all the wires go there, and there's nothing there. They didn't even do the gas one if you needed type thing.
Oh, no, this other one, they shut down, and I mean, the building's still there, but it looks like a bomb went off inside of it. You couldn't turn that one back on if you wanted to.
They got people in so much trouble in the one either Crawford or Pilsen, where they exploded the stack. When it came down, there was so much dust it like covered the neighborhoods. They were getting sued for that. They screwed that up.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but the thing is that there's, so the way coal got killed. So the original open burners were, you know, basically. They were quite dirty, all right, because there was no real attempt to clean them up at all. Right? Smoke just went up the stack and out it came. But as
you had
to
paint your house like every week.
Well, it wasn't. You know what? I grew up. I grew up downwind from one of these things. Okay, I also, for a period of time, I lived fairly close to both O'Hare and then Palwaukee. My apartment was across the street from Palwaukee up on Wolf Road for a while. And boy, you want to talk about, you come out in the morning and there's kerosene residue all over your car windshield, okay, from the jets. And that was small biz jets, all right, that were taking off and landing there. You know, the rich guy with his Lear, right?
You had the Gulfstream, so you're looking down at the guy with the Lear.
Well, it'd be nice if I did, but I didn't.
You had the Piper.
I didn't have the anything. I just lived in the apartment and got to hear hear it coming all the way across. But this is one of the things, though, that I when you look at coal, it's easy to get the vast majority of the particulate material and such out of the exhaust, if you will. Okay, I mean, you know, we've done this, as I pointed out, by the time we got to 2000, for essentially every gasoline powered automobile, we got 99% of the emissions out of the system. Why? Because we have catalytic converter on the car, and you have a feedback controlled fuel system that has an oxygen sensor upstream of the catalyst. And so as a result, the computer, with literally every single firing stroke of the engine, measures the residual oxygen and adjusts the mixture. And as a result, between that and the catalyst, once that has lit off, which does, you can smell the engine when you start cold, but within a minute or so, it gets hot enough that all this stuff comes online and it works. You could literally suck off suck the exhaust, and it would be hard to kill yourself. It'd be very hard to do. And that we got 99% of the emissions out of the environment when we did that, when we got to there. Okay. Now that was 25 years ago. Same thing with coal. If you take the exhaust stream and you spray water through it at high pressure, and so it's essentially water vapor, okay, into that exhaust stack, it precipitates almost all, like 98% or 99% of all the nasty stuff that would otherwise go up the stack, okay? And so in a modern coal plant, you got a huge plume of steam coming out of it. It looks like smoke coming out of the stack. It's not smoke. It's steam. Because you spray all this water in there, and it precipitates all of that the stuff out. And what comes out of the stack is, you know, it's carbon dioxide, okay, which is inevitable because you're burning something. You're taking carbon, combining it with oxygen. But most of the rest is gone. And we achieved that 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Well, in the schools I was in, we didn't achieve that. You know, let me ask another, just a chemical question. We'll move on to the market here a little bit.
Yeah.
How come when it, the hotter it gets, I was at a school, it was coal-fired in the wintertime, and yeah. The firemen would get there early. He said, of course, you never really turned it off. I mean, it started from zero. It took you forever. But you right. So you banked it at night. You put a bunch right. of coal on top, and so all you had to do was stir it back up, and it started. But he said in the morning, the thing was all black smoke. But the hotter you got it, to the point where it was almost no smoke.
Right.
Now why is that? It just burns off more of the stuff, or what?
Well, it's because it's in complete combustion until it gets hot enough. It's the same thing that we did with engine technology in cars, okay? One of the reasons that with any modern engine, anything that's been built since the 1980s or 1990s, you're crazy not to use fully synthetic oil. And the reason is that the dead space at the top of the piston, there's a small amount of space between the wall of the cylinder and the piston before you get to the first ring. And any fuel that's in there will not burn completely. Same thing with starting a fireplace that's, you know, or a potbelly stove. When you first start it, it's not hot enough. All the gases do not burn. So you give off partially combusted stuff, okay? And that stuff's kind of nasty. Once it gets going and it gets hot, then that stuff burns and releases the rest of the energy, which is good from a standpoint of view because you're paying for all of the fuel that you put in there. You want to get all the energy out if you can. But the same they did the same thing with gasoline engines. They moved that top ring up very, very close to the top of the piston, so it runs a lot hotter, and that's where the problems with coking in the oil and, you know, and sludge and stuff like that come from. That's why you always want to run synthetics. But we've solved these problems, Chief. A modern coal-fired power plant, something that, you know, the changes that were put in up until we started saying, oh, well, there's no way to meet these standards. And that's essentially what they did. The EPA kept ratcheting and ratcheting and ratcheting until the point, you get to the point that the power company says, I cannot meet this standard and still make any money. In order for me to do this, I have to spend so much that it is not worth it for me to run this place. Because I can't sell the power for what it costs in order to, you know, to do that.
But I think a lot of them, and the increments, though, would fight the increments to the point to where it wasn't an increment anymore, it was a jump.
Well, but the thing is this. There was you have to draw a line and say, this is where we can say, and then it's like anything else. 80% of every problem costs nothing to solve. The last 20%, as you add each additional percent, it gets exponentially more expensive. And at some point, you have to say, we're just not going to do this. Can we? Yes. Are we? No. And that's the end of the conversation. That's where the line is. And we got there with gasoline engines in cars around 2000. We got there with coal-fired power plants.
We did it with gas furnaces a while ago, too.
Oh, same thing with gas furnaces. You know, there is actually no argument from a ecological standpoint for mandating high-efficiency gas furnaces, because there's no difference in the emissions. It's simply a question of how much fuel. And the mandates that came out of the Biden administration and the Obama administration before that were all about You can't waste any of that energy. Well, you're paying for it, okay? It's not about the amount of emissions in terms of things other than carbon dioxide, which is inherent in using anything that combusts. It's simply that the government said, you got to pay three times as much for this furnace because you're not allowed to buy one that is less efficient.
So what's the point? We got to dash here to Joel, but what's the point of saying the whole city of New York, you can't have gas furnaces anymore? It's crazy to me.
Well, that's even more stupid because first we doubled the cost of the electricity.
Yeah.
Then we say you have to use heat pumps, which, by the way, work great when it's 50 degrees out and not so good when it's zero. All right. And yet natural gas is both reliable and, by the way, can be backed up with a cheap generator because all you need to do is run the fan. Okay.
Yeah.
The gas provides the rest. You can't back up. If the power goes down and you're on a heat pump, you're screwed.
Or if you got electric heat, which is even worse.
Well, watch the meter spin, right, when you're on backup there. So, yeah, no, but this is, we as a country, look, I am tired of people screaming about how we hate the environment, we need to be more green, we need to do this, we need to do that. And then over there in China, they've got 1,000 coal-fired power plants under construction, and they're using slavery to make your Lululemon pants.
Yesterday we had a long discussion about this, and we'll pick it up again on Friday if we don't see it back this next half hour. I think some of the blame, if not a lot of the blame, goes with there's a reason why the Milton Friedmans of the world appear to have been mistaken. And I think the reason is, The companies have found out a way to not... I mean, here the people revolted, essentially, unions and other stuff.
Yeah.
And the government helped out by saying you can't work under the age of 16.
Right.
Somehow or another, the companies in cohort with the politician, there's an awful lot of, from what I understand, there's an awful lot of... call them, what's the word they use down in Mexico, the guys that make things happen for you. There's an awful lot of those kinds of guys just happen to be like sons and daughters of people in the party in China that are getting really rich working with companies from that in China, making sure the other people stay under their thumb.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that didn't happen here, I don't think.
It
to a certain little extent, but... Not on that kind of scale.
They used to do it. That's why we have 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1.
Right. I didn't say we were.
But it's not enforced.
Well, I'm saying the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which I always thought was kind of a weird thing. I'm wondering if maybe there's somebody in what you're talking about mining the cobalt, who's helping, who's making the population work at age 10, and I think we're paying that guy. And that bothers the blooming bejesus out of me, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And anyway, we're going to have to go to Joel. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 34. Maybe we'll... I'm hoping Kenny calls today. If he doesn't, we'll talk to you in a little bit. I'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomorrow Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 32 after two positive days. We have the Dow up 13. Individual stocks in the Dow. Nothing crazy. Got Apple down $1.76. Home Depot up $1.80. Other than that, nothing much. Over in Europe, we have the DAX up 186.9%, FTSE up 63.8%, CAC RON up 14.2%, not as much on the CAC RON. We're in Asia, Nikkei up 285.8%, Hang Seng up 48.2%, Shanghai up 4.1% to flat. Bonds up 4 basis points, 4.41%, the Bund up 2 basis points, 2.54%, Japan up 3 base points, 1.37, but not near their 1.51 high of a few weeks ago. Oil down 24 cents, 61.29, still not going really anywhere, except down. Brent down 23 cents, 64.65. Natural gas up 2 cents, 3.35. This is kind of an odd one. RBOB is staying pretty high here with the oil down to 61. RBOB is almost the same price as when it was 73, which is a little odd. Gold up 10 bucks, 32.37. Silver up 14 cents, 32.31. Copper unchanged, 4.62. Foreign exchange. Dollar, instead of being selling, it's up a little bit today. Where the pounds, the euro's down to 113.2. Again, this is a lot higher than the 108 a couple of weeks ago. British pound, 132.3, pretty much unchanged. Crypto, we've got Bitcoin up 563, 85,555. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at about 41 degrees right now with a high of 52. Windy and cooler, low clouds with a light shower, which will be giving way to some sun later on in the day. So it will be clear with a low of 38 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona. 71 degrees right now with a high of 95. Sunny to partly cloudy and very warm. Today will be clear and with a low of 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Traffic in Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Monroe is 19 minutes. We're looking at about 40 minutes. Iman Edens from Lynn Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf to Interchange, 33 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. Lastly, Iman Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 29 minutes. Talk about sports. Our beloved Bulls are in 10th place in the Eastern Conference, but they still have a fighting chance because the play-ins are in session. For the Eastern Conference, we have Hawks at Magic today at 6:30 p.m. And tomorrow, we have Miami Heat at Chicago Bulls at 6:30 p.m. as well. Western Conference, Grizzlies at Golden State today at 9 p.m. Tomorrow, we have Mavericks at Kings at 9 p.m. NHL, yesterday, the Blackhawks beat Canadiens 4-3 with a shootout winner from Frank Nassar. Today, we have Blackhawks at Senators at 6 p.m. Lastly, in MLB, Cubs lose to Padres yesterday 4-10. And today, we have Athletics at White Sox 6:40 p.m. Cubs at Padres 8:40 p.m. And Diamondbacks at Marlins 5:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
Do we have Professor Joel?
Yes, we do.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Been called a lot of things. I haven't been called the professor. Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday?
Okay. You're like the professor on Gilligan's Island. You're supposed to know everything about everything.
Yeah. I wish I did. I don't know how many of our listeners still remember Gilligan's Island, but could you even have a show like that nowadays?
Well, nobody has any sense of humor now. You're a professor. You had the two ladies fighting over you. What could be better?
Yeah. So where are we at, Chief?
Well, we've got a little bit.
Are we talking sports or are we talking markets?
I'm stunned at how people are accepting the front running. Although they're not all accepting it, but it's pretty scary. When we ran up Friday afternoon, I'm like, all I kept thinking is what's going to come out Saturday morning that nobody knew about except a few people, and sure enough. What do? We got rid of the tariffs on the radios, or not radios, on cell phones and other kinds of stuff. Does anybody think that was a secret?
Oh, boy. I'm just going to agree with you all around. And to take it from that, because it's something we have no control over, I am very disappointed in the price action of Apple.
Do you think that is?
I don't know. I don't know. And I'm looking at this rally, Chief, and can I say that now I'm talking about the overall market. I just don't trust this rally. At all. Does that mean you should flatten out your portfolio, sell all your stocks, buy puts and go short? No. But what I would say is that if you were puking all over your desk early last week and you're reevaluating now, you're doing it into a period of calm, you're doing it in a period of liquidity, and you could get those. I doubt the options have come down to be anything.
Oh, no,
reasonable.
Well, the VIX is.
Yeah.
You got to look at the VIX is 30, it's not 55 anymore, but it's still pretty high. And the thing is, one thing I never give investment advice, but I'm going to give advice on this one. I have so many people, even in the industry, that when they talk about the volatility, they quote the VIX. And I say, I don't want to do this anymore, but I interrupt the conversation and say, wait a minute. You've got to look at the implied volatility of the option you're buying. The VIX is just a number. The VIX is 30. If the option implied volatility of the option you're buying is 70, but the VIX doesn't do any good, right? I mean, it's still, people are expecting all kinds of stuff, and I will give you an example here in a second, but the you just get the idea that there's a lot of stuff happening that you're not privy to. And this is not, you know, it's not really a political statement. It's just, it's the truth, for God's sake. I mean, I'll never tell you this. When I was in the pit the day Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, right? And all of a sudden, the usual suspects, and I won't go through the names, come flying in the pit buying puts. And, you know, nobody has a clue as to why they're doing it. But what difference does it make? It doesn't care. You don't really care what the reason is, right? You just know what's happening. And that night, I had to listen to George Bush Sr., you know, I don't know, sleazebag, as I've come to find out, talking about what a surprise invasion it was. Well, it might have been to him. it wasn't to the guys coming in buying the puts, was it? Just saying, you know. So right now we have tonight's straddle in the QQQ, QQQ's trading 457.66. So tonight's straddle is like almost $8, which is probably down from the 950 or 10 a few days ago. Wow, that's a number. That's, what is it? That's 2%, for God's sake.
That's for today.
For today.
I don't trade options, and for very good reasons, but I would sell that all day long.
Well, you would have gotten clobbered last week.
I mean, yeah, I would. I would have.
I mean, for how many? We went 2 or 3 years, and this is not a plug for Obama or anything. We went almost, what, we went 2 years during the Obama administration where we didn't have a 1% move in a whole, like, a year or two. And now we're predicting 2% moves every day. That's a change.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
I don't know if that's a sign of health or not. I'm going to say no. So I'm kind of agreeing with you.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, there's one thing that we talk about is, you know, after these moves, can you calm down? Can the market calm down? Can you find footing? And, you know, yesterday was only 108 point range. I mean, that's nothing, right? And today, I think today so far you've had a 50 point range. I wouldn't be buying breakouts here, and for sure. And I mean, if you're short in the breakdowns, I think that you gotta have a tight leash, because one headline, I don't know. I think is what happened, and this is just, you know, my opinion. It's not investment advice. I think the market's just immune to this now. And they're like, you know, this is BS. We don't know what's going on. And the one thing the market doesn't like is uncertainty.
Yep.
So I think people are using these opportunities to lighten up and say, you know what, I'm not going to take this for 4 years.
Right.
I'm not going to take this. And, you know, take the money and run. It's definitely the Steve Miller Band market. But the best thing I could say is that, you know, we've rallied way off the low. And we're near, you know, the top of the trading range from last week, and that we're going to consolidate here and blast through and go to all-time highs.
Julia, or one question:
we're going to consolidate here and puke.
We have a minute. One question I have: when Apple went under 200, which, you know, boy, a lot of people thought would never happen. And obviously there's a lot of press going on about their operation in China, and I honestly never really knew how big it was. So I started digging around, and it turns out from two or three different sources, again, this is stuff you see on the internet, they have, I thought they had way more than 14,000 employees over there, but evidently that's the amount of employees they have. But the amount of supply chain to the Apple people, a lot of them being Foxconn, I guess, 1.5 million people. I don't know how you move that. I mean, I don't know what to think about it. My first gut is that if they were all your people, I guess you could. I don't know if you could move 100,000 people out of China to Vietnam like you can. I don't know why I'd put them in Indiana. I don't even know what the logistics of that are. I mean, if your supply chain is that big and it's embedded in China, I don't know how you move that. I mean, the idea that they're going to start making all the stuff back here, Boy, oh boy, it's 1.6 million people.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the price action is telling you right now. I mean, it is. It's Apple's down $2 right now. Apple's down over 1%. The S&P is, it's dragging the S&P down right now.
Yep.
But, you know, I'd like to look at those top components and let them tell the story. And right now, it's a pretty story.
I didn't learn anything from my research. All I did was get more confused. I'm like, you know.
Oh, I know. Like, I really don't know. We don't know. And you know what the problem is? They don't know.
Well, there's dude on CNBC that said, you know, in regards to the government, the White House, or wherever, he says, you got to get a grip. This is a 20-year build-out in China, in Apple. You don't move that in a month because of a tariff. Because it's
okay, Chief, you're just getting me more bearish here. Yeah. The market's falling out of bed here. I just want to... There's got to be some news out here. But no, I just like, you know, the purpose of our communications is to, you know, talk to investors of all different time frames.
Yep.
And I'm talking long-term time frame here. I do not like the market here. I can't tell you whether to sell your holdings or go short or whatever. I would just say be careful up here. And that's my advice.
I'm going to talk to you in an hour, bud. Hey, what's
all right?
What's
2 hours.
What's the link for everybody to get on the show from Stocks and Jacks people?
They gotta join the Stock Trader Network if they want to
okay,
do that.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I'll send you the link to the site. Okay.
All right, thanks, buddy. See you in a little bit. Right, do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Hey, Kenny, how are you, buddy? How are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
All right, except I missed you last week. A week without Kenny is not a good week.
I was traveling, I know. I was up in New York, and I was traveling, and so I was just unable, but I'm here today.
You were traveling, and you were on the subway.
I was, yeah. I actually had a meeting down at, I was actually on the subway, because I had a meeting down at the Exchange that I had to leave by 7:20 where I was, so I was probably in the subway at this time last week.
You know, I actually love the subway. What an engineering marvel, huh?
I got to tell you, while I shunned the subway for a number of years after COVID because it was just a disaster, they are starting to make headway, and certainly the main lines in Manhattan, like the 4, 5, and 6, or the 1, 2, and 3, are certainly okay. I only use them intra-Manhattan, going from Wall Street up to, maybe 50th Street. And so either one of those, I can be on the express, and it's 4 or 5 stops where I have to go, and it's fine during the day. I won't take it at night necessarily, but certainly during the day, it's fine.
I was always impressed when I took it a couple times at Yankee Stadium. I'm like, wow, this is easy. It's like 5 stops.
Yeah, it's simple. When you take it to Yankee Stadium, it's full of people going to the game. So again, it's fine, right? I mean, look, I will say it is the easiest way to get around Manhattan, especially if it's raining out, because the traffic in the city is horrendous.
Yep.
So it's easier to get around by the subway.
So what do you think of this market? I hear you've been... You're getting the memo from the White House, and you're ahead of all these moves.
Yeah. I was the first one on the top of that list. Yeah. No, listen, I continue to think what you've been talking about, right? Volatility is going to continue to create chaos, at least in the short term, until we get clarification on trade, until we get clarification on economic data, until we get clarification on the Fed, and until we get clarification really on earnings. Now, so far, and I know it's only been 3 days, but all the banks are beating, and everyone's beating. I think we got a 90% beat rate right now. And I know it's only 3 days, so Kenny, calm down. But, I don't see the world falling out of bed at the moment. And so, therefore, while I'm cautious on stocks, and I don't think you should be an aggressive buyer by any stretch, there are certainly pockets of opportunity. And you look at some of these really big mega cap names and some of these industries that have gotten mispriced, and I think they're great long-term opportunities. How can you not buy Nvidia when it trades down to $90? How can you not buy Apple when it trades down to 189 or wherever the low that it traded at a couple of weeks ago? I mean, I think that's crazy. Right, that you're not, that people would go, oh my God, I got to sell my Apple. I think it's nuts.
Well, the reason why
I'm,
I think you do,
net a buyer.
The reason why you do, every one of these is a special case. I mean, Microsoft, for instance, I keep looking at those guys. They're down a little bit in terms of, but they still have their revenue per share is it's over 10 or 11.
Right.
A stock that a company that big has never had that kind of a revenue per share ratio that high.
Right.
I mean, that low. The where
right.
And I look at Apple, and I was just mentioning to Joel, and if you heard it, I don't know what to make of them, Kenny. I mean, they've got 1.5 million people in their supply chain in China, and people want them to. I have no idea what that even means for them.
I know. I heard, when you said that, I was like, my jaw dropped. I go, what? But look, Apple can. I keep saying this. You know, Apple's one of those names. I think it's crazy. They make $100 billion every 3 months.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's crazy to think. Oh my God, I got to sell my Apple. I'm going to die with my Apple. Right? I mean, I'll give my Apple to whoever's left, my kids, my grandchildren, if I have any of that stuff. But
so you think
I'm not
Apple's,
selling my Apple.
You think Apple's still a player 30 years from now?
Well, 30 years from now, I don't know. But I won't be here 30 years from now, so it's going to be somebody else's problem.
Yeah, well, what if you are? You still need to have some money.
Yeah, well, you're right. I guess if I am. But you know, something like anything... You know, you certainly are allowed to change your mind as you go forward. Right now, I'm going to keep my Apple. Could I change my mind if the world changes? Of course I could.
What are you doing? What are you
going to
do
if
you
see it?
What are you going to do if you plan to live a year and you make it 30? Then what?
Well, that's bad planning.
I say plan for the 30, but hopefully we're still doing the show.
Yeah, right. Plan for the 30, and maybe I'll make it another year.
God, I'm taking the over on you.
Yeah.
What do you make of the seemingly incredibly, let's say, insider trading? This is like the night before the Iraq war, like every day.
Yeah, you mean the what they're talking about last week when Trump said bye, and then the market soared.
I mean Friday afternoon, I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, something's going on. And Saturday morning, sure enough, you know, we're going to give the phones and everything else the. I mean, this is happening like every other day, it seems.
The announcement, right. Announcement on Saturday morning.
Well,
yeah, no, I hear you. And, you know, you and I, we could talk about it because as far as I'm concerned, it trades all over the place. I think it needs to absolutely be stopped. I've been saying it. I don't think anybody, any elected official should be able to have a personal trading account. I think they should put them all in a blind trust whenever they're serving the public good, and they should stay out of the markets because it does exactly what you and I are talking about. You're always going to accuse somebody of front-running or having information that the rest of us don't have. And look, there are plenty of examples. We all know that. So I'm in the camp that while elected officials should be able to be invested, the minute they become elected, it's got to go into a blind trust, and they have no control over it.
Kenny, when did that change? Because it used to be like that.
I have no idea when it changed, but I would absolutely vote for any elected official has to be in a blind trust.
Actually, because you were on this morning, and I'm probably going to bounce it around with Hal, but of course, this weekend I had a nice brunch, and I said something about, boy, the insider trading. And these people were all Republicans, right? The ladies I was with. First utterance out of somebody's mouth was, well, what about Nancy Pelosi? I go, what do you mean? What about? She's damn near dead. Leave her alone. She's not even in the top 10. Oh, no, she made more money than anybody else. No, she didn't.
But I think they all did. I think it happens on both sides. I'm sorry. This is not a Republican argument. I think they're all guilty.
Well, this is from The Motley Fool, right? And this is a list of people that made... I think these trades were 2024, their trade volume. Here's the 10 top people. And you know what the weird part is, Kenny? There's 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans. I only recognize one name in here. It's a Tuberville sleazeball.
Tuberville.
Who's
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Who's Ro Khanna? Is that even a guy or a girl? R.O.
Yeah, Ro Khanna is the Indian guy out of California. You know who he is.
You know how many trades
see him on TV all the time.
You know how many trades he did last year?
How many?
4,000.
Yeah, so 67. Exactly. So what I'm saying is they... Right, and he's the first one, right? They had Cory Booker on TV yesterday saying, oh, we need to investigate who's front-running. Dude, I got to tell you something. Be careful where you go with that because they should pull everybody's pants down and they should watch. And exactly, they should look at everybody's personal trading account, Democrat or Republican. Well, I don't care. I think
I'm going to show you how much I'm out of it. I don't remember. Second place is a Republican from Texas named Michael McCall with a C, not a K.
Yeah.
1,900 trades. His return was 22%, 167 million shares volume. Then there's a Democrat from New Jersey, Josh Gottheimer. But here's the
okay. You know him. He's always on TV as well.
Well, then the best trader is Kathy Manning, Democrat from North Carolina. She made 56% on 186 trades. But how do you make 1,900 trades or 4,000 trades a year? And that, how does that? I thought being a congressman was a full-time job, for God's sake. These guys are making more trades than I do.
Okay, exactly the point, right? So honestly, I go with Cory Booker. Let's open up the books on everybody and let's find out what they're all doing, because I think it's baloney.
This lady's on all the time. Is Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia?
Yep, she's another one.
Is she a senator or she's a rep?
See, what your list reflects is both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, are both gaming the system, and I think that's baloney. I think anybody, any investor in this country agrees it's baloney that they're even allowed to have personal trading accounts. And if it were me, I would ban personal trading accounts for anyone in the immediate family, because, you know, you can go home and tell your kid or tell your wife, go buy this or go sell that. I think it's bullshit. I think they should all, as long as you're an elected official, then in the immediate family, nobody should be able to have a personal trading account.
This all start with Cheney refusing to stop trading?
I think that exacerbated it, but I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes well before that.
Because the people in Illinois, maybe we're just a bumpkin state, I don't know, but I don't think anybody here did. I mean, I don't even think Senator Durbin does. I mean, I don't think Adlai Stevenson did. I don't see Paul Simon did. I don't think Dirksen did. I don't think Rostenkowski did.
You know, I guess what you have to do is you have to go look, right? You have to look at people's personal. You have to look at their paperwork, at their accounts. I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. You're not going to know until you start to look. But all I know is when you look at all these all these elected officials that are in office that suddenly have, you know, $50, $70, $100 million net worth, you think to yourself, okay, this guy has been an elected official his whole life and he's got $100 million net worth. How do you do that? You and I work ourselves to the bones. I don't know about you. I don't have $100 million net worth.
That we know of.
Right, exactly. Right,
hey, exactly. Kenny, serious question, bud. You and I were both on trading floors, and the options exchange was, you know, the bastard son, right? So nobody really liked them that much, although they managed to do pretty well. When you were, everybody thought we were thieves, which is totally away
right,
from the
exactly.
truth. But the point right. being is, I was in a pit, the OEX pit, 350 people. You were in New York Stock Exchange, an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
You couldn't let a few bad apples run the place, because you would end up, if there's 20 crooks on the CBOE floor, guess what?
Right.
I all of a sudden became a crook, even if
that's
I wasn't.
That's right, 100%.
100%. So you and I think, even though we're not like violent people, we had the balls to make sure that didn't happen, because we didn't want to be tarred with that brush. And yet the people in Congress don't seem to have a problem, because now I honestly think Dick Durbin is not part of any of this. I don't know if he's just not smart enough or whatever, but I wouldn't want to be him and everywhere I go saying all you guys are doing is making money.
You know what? They won't allow themselves. They're not going to allow anyone to investigate them. Look, you and I on the trading floor, I was prevented. I could not trade, because I would lose my ability to make a living. I would lose the ability to go to work every day if I violated those rules, besides the fact of being thrown in prison, because I would have been front-running an order, right? So therefore, it kept me in line, the same way it kept you in line, right? The few bad apples that were on the New York Stock Exchange in 1998, the 8 or 9 brokers that were in fact doing that, when the feds marched on the floor and put those guys in handcuffs in front of everybody, that was the message that kept everybody in line, right? Kept me in line, for
actually,
sure.
You know, on this end, it was totally different, Kenny. It was our business, and we didn't want our business with a bad name.
100%.
It didn't mean if somebody got it. We wanted to stop a guy before he was arrested.
That exactly right. Exactly right. And so the problem is with D.C. and elected officials is they're not going to investigate themselves, and so they're going to throw the roadblocks up so that nobody gets to investigate them, which I think is baloney. I think they're all guilty.
My question remains. Why do the honest people in Congress, and I do believe there's a lot of them, why do they put up with this? Why do they put up with this crap?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Because you and I didn't put up with the crap.
No.
If somebody was breaking the rules that put me at risk, then it was our obligation to turn them in. That's it. It was self-regulatory.
Right.
That's the way everyone stayed in line.
You know, the last thing I want to do is walk somewhere and say, you guys at CBOE are all crooks. The last thing I want to have happen.
Right.
My livelihood, and by the way, I loved it, you know.
100, and so did I. I loved every minute of going to the exchange. I loved being there.
Oh, yeah.
And the thought of being thrown out because I broke the rules or somebody around me was breaking the rules and putting me at risk was enough to keep me as a, and everybody, not just me, but everybody as a policeman. Everybody made sure that, you know, you operated by the rules. And the ones who didn't, that, you know, they were exposed and they were, you know, they were thrown out and immediately, and then banned from the business. Right?
Yeah,
can't do it. Sorry, you're out.
But I can't believe this stuff's going on in Congress. I mean, this is crazy. Now, if you write a book, if you do some speaking engagements, that part I get. Unless, of course, you know, here's, if you got an extra minute, how is it that this has all changed from, now granted, she was out of office at the time when CBOE, I don't know if you were on the board of the New York thing. I was on the board of the CBOE, which meant I got invited whenever like one of the congressmen or somebody came to town.
Yeah, I did that because I was a governor at the New York Stock Exchange, so I participated in all that stuff as well.
But, I mean, you showed up, the person was in the room, you gave a little speech. I think the number, Kenny, you gave him, what, $500 or something? It was a small number. It was just enough. And you gave him coffee and a donut or something. That was about it. And they answered questions. I thought it was this. I'm thinking this is democracy at work. People actually coming somewhere, going someplace, meeting people, finding out about their business, finding out what are things are important to them. I saw nothing untoward about that at like $500. Now all of a sudden you're seeing people, you know, with a speaking engagement of like $250,000 or something. And by the way, they're a horse bleep speaker. I'm sitting there like Janet Yellen, what, made $7 million in 2 years she was out of office by going from place to place? Were people she's supposed to be regulating? How she ever got back in government, I have no idea. But I mean,
yesterday she was on TV talking about how the bond, the sell-off in the bond market and the weakness in the dollar is a crisis of confidence. And this from the woman who completely failed to refinance long-term debt at 1% rates in 2020 when she could have, or 2021. Meanwhile, she didn't, and now we're refinancing debt at 4.5%. Thank you, Janet Yellen.
Well, not to mention, she brought it down to 1%, which she should never have done.
Well, and then she held it there for way too long.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what 1% does for anybody. It ever did, but... Anywho, who are you on with today? I mean, you're going someplace to someplace?
No, not today. Yesterday I was on with Liz Klayman, and then Friday I'm on. Friday's Good Friday, but I'm still on with Stuart Varney on Fox Business. I don't think I got anyone else. I'm not booked yet on anyone else this week, so we'll see.
Out of all those ladies, I'm probably the biggest fan of Liz Klayman. I loved her.
Liz Klayman's great.
Yeah.
Liz Klayman's great. Yeah, but listen, I've known Liz for 20 plus years. I've known Maria since she came down to the New York Stock Exchange in 1998. She was a 28-year-old young woman at CNBC. She was great. I've known her since then, you know.
I had long
relationships.
I had a long conversation with her. I don't know if I'd want to do it. I don't think I'd want to do it. I don't know about her. At the swimming pool out in Vegas, and she was in a bikini and I was in a bathing suit. We both looked pretty good. I don't know about now. Very nice lady, very nice. I really enjoyed talking to her, and pretty girl.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a good-looking, attractive lady, for sure.
Yeah. No, I got you. All good.
Anyway, good luck with all that.
All right, happy Easter to you.
You
I'll
too,
talk
bud.
To you next week.
Okay, S&P futures down 11, as average down 28. Minuscule break, and then Professor Harrell. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains, think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side.
protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamar Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 12. NASDAQ Futures down 28. Ricky, it's always fun when Kenny comes on, isn't it? When he,
yes, it is.
It's even better to see him in person because he's Mr. Gesture.
Oh, yeah?
Whenever he's talking, the hands are moving.
It actually sounds like it. You know, I feel like I could tell that by the way he speaks.
That's a very Italian thing.
Yeah.
When I traded in the OEX pit, the guy across the aisle was a broker. He's a broker's clerk. Nicest guy. And, telling you to, he's on the phone gesturing, and I go, "They can't see you." but what a nice guy, boy! And he, great family. I don't know what he's doing now because man, he was a clerk. I mean, there's nobody, but he was for a real, really good sized broker. So I mean, he surely was no dummy.
Right.
But yeah, but in Florida, there was no. Hey, what the hell was the guy's name? It was a very Italian name, and I go, "They can't see you. There's no camera on the other end of the phone." He's like, somebody goes, "Oh, yeah, you're right." Do we have Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Hey, good morning.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing well.
We have had all kinds of serious economic discussions regarding tariffs and all kinds of stuff. And, what happened to the economic model and, what about foreign corrupt practices? And we're trying to figure out why a lot of the stuff, I'll use the term, didn't work like some people planned, and I think we're blaming Milton Friedman, we're blaming economists, and I think we're not blaming the companies that are paying the political people to keep their people enslaved in some of these places, and maybe that's where the blame is. I don't know. I mean, it's.
I don't think we should blame Milton or
no
economists who.
A lot of people do, boy. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they thought hey, Milton Friedman said that the wages were going to go up in Mexico. I wish the guy was alive for a day. I were to say, hey, yeah, well, economic freedom is going to, bring political freedom and blah blah blah. People will do the same thing as here. And what if we still had a class? And I was never one of these guys that raise their hand in class because I would just want to get out of there. Raise my hand and say, Uncle Milty, what about the Communist Party starts getting paid off by the firms that come over there, and they use the money to keep their thumb on the neck of the population. I think he might have changed his answer. What do you think?
Well, I think the state is. I mean, Marx had it wrong. Marx thought that it was the worker versus the capitalist that was the conflict. It's not that, and it's never been that. What it is the taxpayers versus the people that live off the largesse of the taxes that are collected. That's the difference. And in the United States, roughly 50 years ago, the government expanded. It was worried about its power, I think, the people that live off these taxes that people pay. They expanded it to include more people. And so the more people they can get who are net receivers of tax revenues, the more power they get. So that's always been the conflict. Robin Hood didn't steal from the rich. He stole from basically what was the government, right? He stole from the nobles. The nobles were part of the government. It was that mercantile system.
Yep.
And the king only has power if he can collect taxes. So what he does is he grants these privileges to these nobles, these merchants, and these merchants and nobles collects taxes for the king, right? And then the king secures their monopoly power in the things that they sell or secures the titles. So it's you scratch my back, I scratch your kind of back kind of thing, right? So that's the conflict. That's always been the conflict between the state, the receivers of tax, and the people who pay.
Now, when you say receivers of tax, I would like to, if I was in your class.
Corporations.
I'd raise my hand and I'd say, hey, professor, when you talk about the largesse, the receivers of the largesse,
yeah,
don't necessarily mean the people who pay, you know, get the taxes. It's, in other words, you can pay as much tax as somebody else, but if they give you a monopoly for it, you're a receiver of the largesse. I had a book, yeah, that, I don't know if it's around, I think it succumbed to a flood in my mother's basement. Something about welfare is not only for the poor.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and it definitely basically went down the list of the stuff that you never even think of in terms of who benefits from it, and the, you know, just regular stuff that people think of, and it's who benefits from the government. Well, rich people, the number one on the list, I don't know if it's even there anymore, was Social Security. You know, essentially people that have money live longer because they get better medical attention, or at least they used to. That there's no comparison between how long, and this is, you know, it's a 30-year-old book, how long people who have money live versus other people that worked in a factory or did some stuff. And the next one was like Medicare. You don't see, maybe now in some places, you don't see some 75, 80-year-old Hispanic guy or guy from the black community, if they're still alive, with two new hips and two new knees that the government paid for.
Yeah.
It's just, they mean their access to, I'm not, this is not, it's a gross generalization, I know. Or even, you know, the white population in Virginia probably is not walking around with two new knees. They don't have access to things like that. Or some maybe do and some take advantage of it, but most probably don't. And so and you talk about even stuff like national parks. How many poor people have ever even know there's a national park, or God knows have ever been there? Not that we shouldn't have them. I mean, we love our national parks. It sets, you know, it sets us apart. But the point is, who benefit? If you look at the whole list, virtually the people with money benefit from government way more than anybody else. I mean, there's no question.
Oh, yeah,
we're not even walking towards the corporation part. You know,
when you don't have any data and you're trying to figure out what's going on, you just ask one simple question: quo bono, who benefits?
Yeah, well, where's it?
That's
go?
All you have to ask.
Who's the winner and who's the loser?
You look for the motive, right? That's what you do. You look for the motive, and that usually will tell you the truth. It will reveal the truth.
Follow the money. Right? Follow the money.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is my wife is Haitian American, and my mother-in-law and my father-in-law escaped Haiti in the 70s. You know, that's when Haiti really kind of turned. My mother-in-law talks about how wonderful Haiti was in terms of peace and whatnot.
Was she talking Papa Doc or Little Doc or what?
Yeah, and it just, they had to get out, and I think they were given permanent residency, and then they later got their citizenship. But I think they got their first legal status, I think, from Reagan when he signed that, I think it was an executive order in the early 80s, right? So they came to New York with basically nothing, and they created some serious wealth. But my mother-in-law and I have had this conversation a lot. Why is Haiti the way it is today? You don't really want to live there. There's no law and order. They have gangs, Roman. And then you look at former British colonies. For the most part, if you look at former French colonies or former Spanish colonies and you compare them to former British colonies, the British colonies do pretty well. I mean, you got Hong Kong, you got the United States, you got Canada, you got Australia. The former British colonies have done very well since, you know, getting their independence. And the funny thing is, I came across the answer.
The rule of law goes across all that stuff.
Yeah, but here's a really interesting thing. The answer came from Rose Wilder Lane's Discovery of Freedom. It's a history of what I would call the bottom 95%, the history of the common person that never gets written about. And the thing was, we think of King George as some autocratic dictator, but he really wasn't. When you read this book, she is really sarcastic. And she talks about how the kings of England were kind of like, they issued some edicts. They didn't really control the economy. They instituted like things that we consider tyranny, but you compare it to like the French kings, and France controlled Haiti. Haiti was a colony of France, and the king of France dictated every little thing. People waited for his orders. That wasn't the thing with the British. And the thing about the British colonies in America that became the United States, a revolution was fought over a tax that was about 1-5% of your income. That's what it was fought over, right? So the American colonists were pretty much kind of, for the most part, just left alone. And that right there created this free market economy that really exploded.
Well, plus, you know, you're had to be a sailing ship. I'm going to show my ignorance here. I'm going to say you're a minimum of 35 days away from your government, and people sitting there going, "We don't need these guys."
I mean, they're pretty much left alone.
I know what I'm saying. On the other hand, is we don't need these guys.
Very lazy affair. Very lazy affair.
But what I'm saying is that works both ways. One is they leave you alone. The other is, why do we need them?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Whereas the French colonists that were in the Americas, the Louisiana Territory is French. They were living under that culture of central planning control.
Well, you're...
That was much more...
Yeah, except there was nobody lived there.
Yeah.
Other than New Orleans.
Well, one of the reasons why nobody lived there is because they had to get approvals for everything. They had to get permits. Where the American colonists, the British colonists, they're pretty much left alone. It was seriously laissez-faire for the most part, relatively speaking, to the French colonists in the Americas and the Spanish, right? So the Americans were pretty much, the British Americans were pretty much left alone to figure out things for themselves. Whereas the French colonists, the Spanish colonists, they're waiting for orders from the king. So that's the cultural difference. And that's why I think places like Haiti struggled so mightily, whereas the former British colonies...
Okay, now you brought up the Louisiana Purchase, let me edumacate our listeners here. Louisiana Purchase was in 1803, and oh, by the way, attorney Hal Snar could probably make a case that it was an illegal purchase, because it was originally, the French got it from the Spanish, and the Spanish, as part of their deal, was if the French ever wanted to sell it, they had to give the Spanish right of first refusal, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So we're talking 1803. So for those of you who can remember back that far, it wouldn't be me.
Yeah, I think Napoleon needed the money to finance his war. Yeah. His world wars.
Yeah. So, so the New Orleans, in the very southern part of the Mississippi, Baton Rouge probably on south, was under French.
Baton Rouge.
Yeah, was under French control, and you still can see that if you go to New Orleans. The rest of it was, other than a couple of spots in Illinois, was totally west of the Mississippi. It actually included a little bit of Canada. There was nobody there.
Yeah.
So there was...
Well, there were trappers and...
Yeah, do you think they knew they were under French rule?
Yeah. Well, yeah,
we're talking about Montana in 1803. So
yeah, the trappers in Idaho... You know Idaho is...
By the way, Idaho is not part of it.
Well, Idaho was...
Actually, a little piece in the very northeast was part of the Louisiana Purchase.
There's towns all throughout Idaho that have French names, from Dubois. We call it Dubois.
I'm looking right at the map. Idaho is the very top. You know, the little piece that goes up. None of that was part of it. The bottom. I'm going to say the very top right corner was part of the purchase. And I'll bet those people there didn't even know if there was anybody there. 1803.
Yes.
Just saying. You know what's interesting? You were mentioning the and people, you know, and this, I don't want to go barge into a big time political thing here, but when you look at what's going on in Washington right now, you have to look at motivations.
Yeah, you have to look at who benefits.
And who benefits? And now you realize that you're if
now just because somebody happens to have benefited doesn't mean, because we gotta remember there's causation and correlation. Well, just because you get correlations.
You're not going to wander off of what a deep thinker our president is. I mean, I just don't understand the depth of thought. I look at the simple stuff here. Tariff revenue in this country used to be $67 billion. And now, even though we're off again and again, like, you know, it's like we're doing the old in and out.
Like Homer Simpson turning the light on.
Yeah.
The light on and off. So future, light goes on, light goes off.
Future tariff revenue, of which I don't know if Trump thinks he's going to spend and pay any of it, is going to be $659 billion. Now, I think both of us will take the under on that. Guess what the total corporate tax revenue is now in this country?
Probably about, what, 400?
528. So the increase in tariff revenue is going to be more than all the corporate tax revenue. And you know they're going to try and cut that down, the corporate tax revenue. So what you just mentioned, I don't know if you put two and two together, and corporations aren't even going to pay any taxes, Hal.
Yeah.
They're just going to run our lives and not pay taxes. And by the way, yeah. I'm not anti-corporation because I run my own business my whole life and can't imagine doing anything else. But this is sick. What the amount of stuff these big corporations have, with the amount of money lost by the big seven last week or the week before was more than the entire Russell or something, or like twice the entire Russell.
To be fair, they were probably overvalued.
I'm saying
you look at the run.
Hal, the message is they're too damn big.
You look at their run ups. Look at the run up on the NASDAQ. And then it's dropped down to the long run, kind of like geometric smooth trend. It was inflated. I mean it was overpriced.
Okay, but what I'm saying is there was
a bubble.
Did Meta really have to take over? What did they grab? Did they grab? Was it Facebook and WhatsApp? Something they're going to trial about. Ricky, what's the trial about? Meta's the two places they just grabbed. Was it Instagram and something else? They grabbed two competitors in the last couple of years.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And now they're trying to get those guys to Federal Trade Commission's trying to get them to split those back off.
Who's going to get TikTok? That's the question.
One of Trump's buddies.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Whoever the biggest contributor is going to get. I mean, I hate to say that, but boy, how is it?
Kevin O'Leary wants it. We've been talking about it.
There's a guy that, if we shook hands with him, would you count your fingers or what? Just saying.
He's a pretty funny guy. I've seen him on the Gutfeld show.
Oh, he's got serious personality.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I don't. The idea of the TV actor becoming my moral fiber, I'm just not ready to go there. Look what happened with our president. I mean, and again, I hope he does a good job, and he's my president too. But this idea of people bringing a big, what NVIDIA had, there was a $1 million plate table a couple of weeks ago or something. This idea of people bringing a satchel of money and then the next day you take the law and you change it their direction. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, it probably has happened now. I'm not trying to be that naive, but it probably has happened. But I look at this front running every day and I'm just astounded.
Yeah, I think people have to open up their books, like Kenny was saying. I mean, these guys have to open up their books because otherwise people are going to just assume.
They're not going to. Let's put it this way. You use the wrong, my friend, you use the wrong words. In a world that's normal and moral, they ought to open up their books. They're not.
Yeah.
When you say they have to, they're not going to have to. The chance of these guys, matter of fact, under the Obama administration, there was, who'll know this? Probably Wayne will know this. The Obama administration, there was a big hue and cry about people in Congress trading.
Oh yeah, and remember the Boston Marathon bombing?
Yeah,
Boston Marathon bombing.
Well, they were trading, and all of a sudden, there was a rule against it in Congress, and secretly, a year later, they rescinded the rule with, like, no press.
A year before the Boston Marathon bombing, they instituted the Stock Act, which really hampered their ability to trade on this political information. A year later, the Friday before the Boston Marathon bombing, in a voice vote, Congress really gutted it and allowed friends or staff and maybe even them to engage in trades.
Yeah.
And then it was signed into law a few hours after the marathon was bombed in Boston.
Yeah, keep it out of the news.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, and then you look at, for example, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi, and I only mentioned it because, Democrats are supposed to be the champions of the poor. But everybody's doing this, right? And I've shared charts of Republicans and Democrats both benefiting from their insider information. But you look at this Nancy Pelosi chart from 2013 on, she starts really clobbering the market. And now she's been hit this year. I think she's down 25%. But if you look at this long-term chart, she's up like 600-700% since 2013.
I don't think she was doing 1,000 trades a year like these other guys.
Oh, no, no. And, you know, she's probably not doing the trades. Her husband's doing the trades, right?
Yeah. And she the last 10 years, all you do is get on the Magnificent Seven. And
she's
you
in bed, and she's having a dream, and she's, you know, dreaming about who's going to get the F-5022 new fighter pilot contract. And her husband hears it, writes it down, and buys the stock the next day, right? It's all innocent.
Well, it's amazingly different. And I'll tell you what, if you, boy, walking on a plank here, what do you think? Well, we have an awful lot of female listeners. I guess they can write in and tell me. What do you think the hue and cry would be if you said that if somebody gets elected, male or female, to House or Senate, now you have to pay people more, I would imagine, if you said their spouse has to lead a totally private life, that Wendi Graham can't be on the board of Enron, can you imagine the hue and cry from the ladies of the world, or even the guys if the ladies are elected? What do you mean I can't what do you mean I can't have a job? And once you get on that road, why should I not be able to sit on a board? Because you got influence, that's why. Oh no, I don't have any influence, that's my husband, that's not me, or that's my wife, that's not me. I mean, can you imagine walking down that road? I talk about a road with cactus coming out after you.
If people heard some of the conversations my wife and I have about everything from race to whatnot, we have really interesting conversations. It would probably shock a lot of people. I mean, so you can imagine the kind of conversations that these married couples who have this political insider information have. I don't know. I mean, if you know who's going to get the contract and you slip that out to your spouse and the spouse goes out and buys it, right? You personally can say, hey, I didn't buy it, right?
Well, when Phil Graham,
I'm not sure what the rule should be, but maybe Kenny's right. Maybe all these stock trades should be in a blind trust, and the person in Congress receiving these kind of information, they can't inform. You know, but there's always ways around that.
Well,
right?
but it's, you know what, that's the thing. How everybody drops back into this.
Can you literally ban?
Let me give you an example. And I don't know. These are a few individuals that I had. One of my friends, and he's still an attorney, working hard. Real smart guy, very successful. Does a lot of tax stuff here in Chicago, so he's pretty connected. When I first got to the trading floor, and I was put on a committee, and I was talking about. And I wanted to know more about insider trading, so I grabbed him for lunch. His nickname's Doc, and I said, Doc, what's the deal with this insider trading? And he goes, nobody in his right mind wants to be a representative. And I go, what are you talking about? This is probably 1983. He says, it's a horse bleep job. You're making, at that time, maybe 30 grand a year. Ricky, do me a favor. Find out what the U.S. representative salary was in 1983. I'm going to say less than 40. He goes, you need two houses. And he goes, the guy in my area, I don't know if he's even still alive, Marty Russo, nice guy. He goes, look at Marty Russo. He plays golf at Beverly. He's a guest. He can't afford Beverly. Everybody who is in his law school class is making three times what he's making. And he's a representative. He goes, everything that he has any investments, which he probably doesn't, they all are in a blind trust, and he can't trade them, even if he wanted to. Yeah. Now, whether this was a gentleman's agreement or whether it was a rule, I don't know. And now all of a sudden, we're so far past that. I don't know how the hell it happened. I mean, the people here in Illinois that I know of, Paul Simon, he came back, he didn't have any money. He was a senator for how many years? He ended up teaching school at Eastern Illinois or someplace till he died. I mean, Dan Rosenkowski didn't have any big dough, and he was head of the Ways and Means Committee forever. I mean, I don't think Paul Douglas came back when he died. He went back to teach. I don't think Everett Dirksen did. I don't think Dick Durbin.
Denny Hatcher, I think he
Then he asked if it was an unusual case, and he was much later, and he ended up buying a piece of property and got a freeway exit to favor his property. But I don't think he didn't come back with millions of dollars or anything like that. But I'm saying this is a when you say 10 or 15, 20 years, is a fairly recent phenomenon that these guys go there and it didn't used to be that way. And first of all, it's defined as a full-time job. Like a Chicago alderman, you can be an alderman, and oh, by the way, be an attorney representing people against the city, or you can be an investment advisor broker like me, and I could be an alderman and not have to quit my job. But if I was a U.S. rep, I couldn't do this. By definition, that's a full-time job. And yet, this guy here I'm looking at, you explain to me how the hell, I mean, we trade a boatload for people. I'd be hard-pressed to say I do 2,500, 4,000 trades a year. Good Lord. This guy, rogue kind of, how do you do 4,000 trades when you got another job, for God's sake? That's why I do the trades, because my clients have a regular job and they can't do them, right?
Tom, we hear about these reps and senators co-sponsoring and authoring these bills. I mean, do they really write the stuff? They don't write it. Somebody writes it for them.
Yeah, they put their staff, and then they read. But Phil Graham, that was probably the worst situation. His wife, Wendy Graham, was on the board. Matter of fact, she was the disciplinarian. What do they call it? What's the guy on the board or the lady on the board who's in charge of governance? And she's supposed to be the dean of discipline of the damn place. And she got him to get a bill through Congress that the stuff they did, those transactions they were doing over the counter, were not regulated by the CFTC. So how many people did that relationship hurt? Millions? How many people went broke on that? How many people lost their job and everything? And nothing happened to her, or nothing happened to him. I met him about three or four times at these breakfasts and whatnot. He was a character, big tall guy. Phil Graham. I mean, I don't know if him and his wife ever saw each other, but it's none of my business. But she was on the board and ran in a couple other places. Who was what's his name? McConnell's wife was on the board of Wells Fargo, wasn't she? Alina Cho.
Well, and
she ended up becoming Secretary of Transportation or something. And something. She had a couple cabinet positions, didn't she?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Tell her she can't do that? I don't see that. Yeah. I don't see that bill going anywhere. You and I sit there and go, wait a minute, I can't do it, but she can do it? I mean, I are somewhat common sense. We go, how the hell does that work?
The Stock Act being gutted the Friday before the Boston Marathon bombing in 2013, April 2013. That being gutted, right around tax season, by the way.
It was
right around tax season. It being gutted in a voice vote tells you that, to me, that voice vote tells me that, these Democrats and Republicans, They act like they hate each other on the news, but as soon as the cameras are turned off, I think they're pretty friendly. I think it's just all show. It's show to divide Americans up into these little factions.
Well, being from Chicago, hell, I wouldn't use the term friendly. There's aldermen here in Chicago that probably hate each other, yet together they're not going to.
Aren't most aldermen in Chicago Democrats?
Well, by name, but that doesn't mean they are. They're emperors. They're not. More Republicans donate to these guys because they're in charge. What's the difference?
Anyway,
S&P futures down 19. The S&P futures down 58. Got a quick break here. I'll be right back.
Okay. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now.
Loan Roll Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ Futures down 60. So not much. We were up. Now we're down a little bit. Dow Futures down 166. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 110. Oh, I'm sorry, up 110.5%. Again, these guys need to catch up on our rally yesterday. FTSE up 59.7%. CAC around down 3. Call that flat. We're in Asia. Got the Nikkei up 285, up 0.8%. Hang Seng up 48.2%. Shanghai up 4.1%. Bonds. 10-year up 2 basis points, 4.39. The Bund up, nothing, 2.53. Japan up 3 basis points, 1.37. Oil still can't really get out of its own way, 60.91, down 62 cents. Brent down 60 cents, 64.28. Natural gas up down a dime, 3.22. RBOB unchanged at 201. So I'm thinking the refinery margin here is pretty high. So this is probably a decent time for refiners, at least. It seems like it would be. We've got gold up 560, 32.31. Silver up 13 cents, 32.30. Foreign exchange, and this has been the wild mover lately, even though we haven't really been looking at it. A lot of people don't. The dollar has been getting crumbled. This morning it's kind of unchanged at 113 against the euro. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, Chief. 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 41 degrees right now with a high of 52. Windy and cooler. Low clouds with a light shower, which will be giving way to some sun later on. Tonight will be clear with a low of 38 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 71 degrees right now with a high of 95. Sunny to partly cloudy and very warm. Tonight will be clear with a low of 64 degrees. Let's talk about traffic in Chicago. It's looking pretty rough out there today. Emma Kennedy from Monroe's, 44 minutes. We're looking at 59 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, 52 minutes. Iman Dan Ryan from 95th, 35 minutes. Lastly, 46 minutes. Iman Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan. Sports. We got play-ins in session for the NBA. Eastern Conference, we got Hawks at Magic today, 6:30 p.m. And tomorrow we have Miami Heat at Bulls at 6:30 p.m. as well. Western Conference, Grizzlies at Golden State today at 9 p.m. Tomorrow, Mavericks at Kings, 9 p.m. as well. NHL, Blackhawks beat Canadiens 4-3 yesterday with a shootout winner from Frank Nassar. And today we got Blackhawks at Senators at 6 p.m. Lastly, MLB, yesterday Cubs lose to Padres 4-10. Today we have Athletics at White Sox, 6:40 p.m. Cubs at Padres, 8:40 p.m. Lastly, Diamondbacks at Marlins, 5:40 p.m. Back over to you guys.
So, Hal, I mean, that's a Kevin question. I'll ask him tomorrow, but I don't watch much of the WNBA. But evidently, the Chicago Sky at a 10th pick. He drafted some girl from Croatia or someplace over in Europe, and she's not even sure she wants to come here. They're going to try and talk her into it, I guess, whatever.
You're only going to make 80 a year.
So yeah, she's not even sure.
Here in Chicago's not much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. We're very, very strange stuff. But and when we have the politics that's flying around, and we have you can't tell the truth from fiction here. But in my opinion, this whole thing about the tariff stuff and what it can accomplish and what people are being told, which is, I think it's a huge just regressive tax. So they can let up on the corporate tax, and I hope I'm wrong there, but what is? I sent all you guys the picture of your guys all hero Ronald Reagan, talking about how horrible tariffs are. This is years ago. This is when Milton Friedman was talking about it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, in the meantime, it looks like instead of helping the countries with child labor and those kinds of things get themselves out of those situations, it's almost like we're perpetrating it. And so I don't know if tariffs is the answer, but somehow or another, we're becoming the problem and not the solution. And I honestly don't know. I know all you guys have your views on all this stuff, but I think if we all got in a room and actually tried to find the fix for that, I don't know what it would be. Do you?
Well, my hope, this is a hope. It's not a belief, it's a hope. And my hope is that all this tariff stuff that's been going on for the last couple months is just the way to get trade restrictions and tariffs kind of like on the same level. Let's say, I think the world will be much better off if every nation that we trade with, the U.S. and our trading partners, if we got these trade restrictions, if you calculate them into a tariff rate, like if you take the quotas and all that stuff and the subsidies and the VATs, and if you can get all that down to say under 10% across all nations, that's relatively free trade. And the thing about free trade is it's the tide that lifts all boats. what is called a free trade agreement is not a free trade agreement. It's an agreement between nations that give certain companies the exclusive right to import or export into and out of a country. That is not free trade. These free trade agreements are very cartelized. And that's what government does. It creates these cartels.
Well, because they're the ones with the $1 million. They're the ones with the $1 million in the briefcase, not you and me.
Yeah, exactly. So my hope is that when the dust settles, that we have these agreements with these other nations where the effective tariff rate is around, say, 10% or less. And if that's the case, I'm okay with that because I think it bears up. Now, the problem is, what's going to happen to these poor people living, working in these factories in these countries like Vietnam? I mean, we talk about them working in this factory, and maybe they're working 15 hours a day at these jobs where they can't take a water break or a pee break, right? Where they're not allowed to drink water because they'll take more pee breaks.
Well,
what's going to happen to that?
If you're not allowed to take a pee break, eventually you do something.
Yeah. So what happens to those people when maybe the factory moves from Vietnam in the United States? I mean, what's going to be the next best alternative to working in that factory?
Well, I mean,
horrible.
I think that the, let's put it this way, you know this because you teach it in class.
Yeah.
That everybody has some sort of a comparative advantage in something.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why trade exists in the first place, correct? Well, other than you have a product that nobody else has. I mean, you're the only ones with the cola nuts and everybody wants to drink Coca-Cola. Well, that's one reason.
Well,
but it's just
the company in the United States that doesn't have a comparative advantage in some industry wants the federal government to create an ability for them to stay in business in the United States, or for they want an agreement that allows them to thrive.
Well, I hear where I'm going with this.
That's the problem.
I think if you were you or Milton Friedman, by the way, you guys are getting more and more alike by the day, if which isn't a bad thing for you, by the way, you might win a Nobel Prize.
I got a PhD from Washington State.
But let's put it this way: we have, when I say we, the U.S. has massive comparative advantages in a lot of things. We have power, we have property, we have water, we have all kinds of stuff. And to the point where our people go into a factory and probably can have a pretty good, pretty good efficiency. So our person, because of the power, because of the machine, because of everything, actually you can pay him or her $50 an hour, and the stuff they pile out for you and me, the owner, is worth $150 an hour. And we're happy as clams. We're making money on his or her work, and they're making a lot of dough on theirs from them doing the work, and everybody's sort of happy. Now, Vietnam, for instance, doesn't have the natural resources, doesn't have the stuff, and they have a lot of people. So they have human capital, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And they're willing to put more people at the project, less machines, less power, less everything, so where their people don't have the same efficiency, because you know when the guy here is making, you know, something of value, the person there is making a T-shirt, but there's some value there. Now, but to me, there's a difference between that person not making $50 an hour, but maybe they're making 20, than having somebody 8 years old spinning the thing. So, I think we can do this kind of one of three ways, and I'm asking you, Abe, if there are a fourth or fifth way. If we're going to try and even this up, we could take some blunderbuss approach like the administration's taking and just throw tariffs at it. But none of this really seems to care. They care to me whether the person working is 10 years old or not, or whether they're making. Either we say we're not going to do business with a country that allows people under 16 to work. We're not going to do business with you if you don't have the same sort of human rights laws that we do, at least on some small scale. That would be solution maybe number two, tariffs being one, and I don't think that's a good one. Or number three, any company from here that we find bribing, you know, the Banana Republic dictator to keep his thumb on your workers, we're going to throw you in jail. that been maybe solution number three. Maybe there's four, five, and six that I haven't thought of yet, but somewhere in there is some kind of a solution. I think if we were to ask Apple how much money they've paid the Chinese political system in the last 20 years, we would be astounded. And what do you get for that money? You get cheap labor, because if they try and go on strike, you're going to shoot them. The police will show up. Now, am I wrong on this or not? There's a lot that goes into this. There's a reason why the Milton Friedmans of the world and the Ronald Reagans of the world, it didn't work out the way they thought. I think the reasons are either the government or our people.
Well, I think the key to all this is really we have to find a way. I think the only way you can get out of poverty is people are politically and economically free. That's the only way you can get out of poverty. And the problem with these states is that they put their thumb on the economy in some way or another. And they typically do that to benefit a company that is a friend. So, you know, a lot of people will argue, well, we don't want 8-year-olds working in a factory. Well, the 8-year-old working, if the 8-year-old's not working in the factory, or if the 15-year-old's not working in a factory in a very poor, impoverished nation, what's the alternative for that person? What's the alternative for the family, the father and mother who needs that person to work in the factory to help bring money into the household?
Hell, I think you could make the claim here, when back, if you go back far enough in the labor thing that Carl and I go through every month on the Labor Friday, if you go back far enough on those numbers, where it says institutional population, like available for work, it's everybody over the age of 16. You go back to 1930, that number was 14.
Now,
in the U.S., we don't have as much human capital, and I'm going to say that if I was writing a paper for Hal, I would say if you take people under 16 off the rolls, like we did here, essentially, I'm sure people cheated, but by and large, we took them off the rolls, that the laws of supply and demand take over, you're going to have to pay mom and dad a little more, because guess what? They're not competing against the 10-year-old. So maybe you would, part of the problem would be solved. You actually might have to pay people a little more if the 14-year-old wasn't available.
You know, when I was in high school as a freshman, I was only 15. And I needed a job. My mom was working as a school bus driver. She was driving a potato truck during the spring or during the summer. And then she was managing the apartments we lived in. We got free rent for her managing the apartments. I needed a job. My dad wasn't paying child support. And Dale Devish, the chef at the Don City Inn, hired me. And I was legally not allowed to work and make minimum wage.
You weren't legal.
Yeah, I was illegal. I was illegal, right? And Dale hired me because he knew me. I helped. And my mom was running an unlicensed daycare out of our apartment too, so she had four hustles going on, right? She was running this unlicensed daycare out of her apartment, and he knew me because a lot of times I was the person that gave his kids back to him after he got off the shift, after he finished, you know, working at the Dodge City Inn. So he knew me personally, and
Throw the kids at him, or you'd walk them to him, or what?
Well, you know, I would take care of him. My mom was, you know, driving the school bus. He'd come over and pick up his kids from our unlicensed daycare. And so I knew his kids very well. They were, you know, I treated them very nicely. You know, I made meals for them because I knew my mother needed the money to pay the rent. So it was,
and that prepared,
she's running an unlicensed daycare.
That prepared you for the triplets.
Yeah, exactly. So she's running this unlicensed daycare. I'm working illegally as a dishwasher. And if it wasn't for that job, we would have really struggled.
I think here the only thing you do legally, because I did it, I think you could get a work permit of some kind.
Yeah.
If you could be a caddy at 15, because I was.
Well,
which was a cool job. Caddy was a cool job.
Well, there was no golf course in our town.
Well, yeah.
Right. The only job a 15-year-old could, you know, do really well would be
you like washing dishes or bussing tables, and I did both.
Now, if your family owns a restaurant, you can work there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. You can, man. No problem. Yeah. But that's a problem with a lot of these laws. I mean, when I was in Vietnam or when I was in Thailand, I learned this firsthand. If these young girls aren't working in these factories, what are their parents going to do with them? They're going to sell them off to a brothel.
Yeah. Well.
So that's the reality of it. In some of these countries.
Well, but so I'm saying, if you don't want it to happen, and you don't want to trade with somebody who does that, because otherwise all you end up doing is offshoring the stuff you don't want to do. Well, you don't want to do that either. I'm trying to find a solution here. By the way, I don't have it. If I had it, I would just blurt it out.
The solution is to maximize personal, political, and economic freedoms. That's the solution throughout the world.
If you're broke,
the solution
you have
is
no
not more government central planning.
If you're broke, you have no freedom.
Well, but when people are allowed to freely, when people in Idaho are freely allowed to trade their potatoes for Cuban cigars, the people in Cuba,
people in Idaho have property. The guy used to be on the show with us went over to China in the rural areas. This is 15 years ago. Yeah. You know what the average size of the family plot was?
Not very much.
Pick a number.
A bit, 1.5 billion people, and China's got a finite size. So,
well, but they ended up.
I would say maybe an acre.
It was like a quarter of an acre or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, just enough to plant vegetables and maybe have a cow and a few chickens.
Yeah.
And that's you made do on that somehow.
Yeah. Well, if these factories come back to the United States, they're not going to come back in the sense of a Henry Ford style assembly line. They're going to come back as these highly automated factories where the workers are maintainers of assembly robots. And
there's always going to be something you have to do, but it's not going to be that much.
Yeah. It's going to be IT.
Well, what do you think?
When high tech maintenance.
How many hours? I don't know if you were on the show last week. How many hours does it take to assemble a car?
Yeah.
What's the number?
I would say you could probably assemble a car in a day easily. Right.
Well, but it's like 18 to 32 hours, depending on the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking about assemble. We're not talking about you're shoving in a full transmission. You're shoving in a full motor. So there's hours to do that. But the total assembly, putting the thing together with all the robots and all the other stuff you have, and winging the tires on and everything, it's somewhere around 25 hours.
Yeah.
So it's not a whole lot.
Yeah. But it's going to be highly automated. I see these manufacturing,
but it already is. It already is here. I mean,
and it's. I don't see a human in the factory on the assembly line.
Yeah, I think we're always going to be someplace.
Yeah,
it depends on what you're making. I mean, if you're making a railroad car, there's always be people there. I mean, there's always be all kinds of people building a commercial jet.
Yeah. Well, I think the future is going to be high tech maintenance for a while.
Well, I mean, there's got to be massive industrialization in building a cell phone. I mean, nobody's putting solder in there anymore. Those are all stamped, right? No.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But what do you think? I mean, right, we talked about earlier with Kenny or Joel. When you have people say stuff, and this is the bizarre part I get out of it. Well, again, I don't want to beat up on the administration is tremendous at talking to people on a level that's kind of half lie and half something. They're very, very good at it. I mean,
I would say it's just populism.
Well,
I wouldn't say they're lying. I just say they're engaging.
But it's one thing to say to people, we want Apple coming back here, goddammit. And, we don't want our people, these should be our jobs. All of a sudden, I look at this stuff, and I don't know much about the Apple thing. And we don't know, wait a minute. There's 1.5 million people in China supporting Apple's 14,000 people. And you talk to the person, and or you see the guy on CNBC, he goes, what are these people talking about? This is a 20-year project in China, maybe more. You don't have them back here by Thanksgiving.
No, huh? I mean, it takes a while.
I mean, do you want to spend the next 20 years bringing the entire Apple infrastructure here? I mean, not only that, if you could, maybe we could do it in 15, but it's not going to be by the end of the year. And you have we have these messages getting out there. You know, as Apple, have they provided all kinds of money that the Communist Party is now using to build money against or build weapons against us? Well, I'd want to look at that if I was a president. I'm not saying they did it on purpose, but I don't want people here paying off other governments for people.
Yeah.
We have a Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, don't we? When was the last time we used it? Do we ever? If the people are giving us money, I mean, how do we decide who we're going to have an antitrust case against? I mean, if you bring your, and I'm not just blaming Trump on this, but if you contribute the right people, you're out of the legal system. It appears that way, huh?
Yeah. I think that's been like that for a while.
I know people that are defending people that have been gone after on the protected, what, the PPP plan, the portfolio, what was the word, those three words for? The thing that during COVID where they gave everybody money for keeping your employees, the protection plan, payroll protection plan, right? And every one of the people, though, Hal, is somebody who filled out the application, didn't even get the money, and it was a false application. Or somebody who got, you know, whatever, 20 grand or something, which you shouldn't steal 20 grand. Come on, I know that. But I haven't seen one big person who would be in the news where people have gone at that money. I haven't seen one nonprofit organization. I haven't seen one church. I haven't seen one law firm. I haven't seen anybody like that that's being gone after. We go after the lowest hanging fruit. And if you're big enough, you get away with everything. It appears, unless you rub the wrong guy the wrong way on the political chain.
Yeah, if you look at the chain account and cash of the top 1% in America, it looked like the rocket yesterday. It goes straight up, and then the Fed stopped publishing the series in 2022. Why? Probably because it kept going up. It's just crazy how much money that ended up in the checking accounts and the wallets of the top 1%.
Well, the other day when the Fed guy came out, we had a big rally last week. Was it Wednesday or Thursday? It's hard for me to keep track. One of the Fed guys came out. Now, first of all, Hal, why do those guys have to say anything between meetings? Mm-hmm. And what is the purpose of that? I don't remember that happening before. But some guy came out and he said, "Don't worry, the Fed is actively looking to stand behind the market if they need to, if it was a couple down days." Anybody who doesn't think that is a tradable piece of paper is, there's very few things that I'm really good at, Hal. One of them is looking at the market. Doesn't mean I know where it's going up or down. But if you give me that piece of paper, I can make some money. I know it. Now, the labor numbers, you know, who knows? They're all over the block. I don't think you give me that number every month. I don't know if I'd even make money on it. You give me a Fed announcement like this, I'm doing pretty good. You tell me Trump on Saturday morning was going to cut back on the tariffs on some of these companies. I know what to buy Friday afternoon. I'm not that big of a dummy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing you mentioned that is China apparently is doing the same thing. They're trying to run out the clock on these tariffs. And I guess China's M2 is up almost 7% year over year.
Yeah.
Year over year from last March to this March, it's up 1.6% month over month, which annualizes, depending on if you use multiply by 12 or you use a compounding formula, anywhere from 18 to 20%, right? If you annualize that month over month, 1.6% increase. So what China's doing is they're selling, the China's sovereign wealth fund are buying ETFs to stabilize their stock market as their central bank sells U.S. treasuries to get dollars to support the yuan. So China's doing the same kind of thing.
Well,
now, the funny thing about China is that they're going to run out of these treasuries. They only have a finite amount.
Did you read that thing I sent out? I don't usually send out other people's pontifications, but I sent that thing out from Ray Dalio. I thought there was some pretty interesting points in there that we had not brought up on the show yet.
Oh.
And he was talking about how the two biggest debtor nations in the world now are us and China. And we're fighting over tariffs and trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Because this is so ignorant, it's scary. Because we're the two countries that are liable to cause the world problems because we're so deep in debt, both of us.
Yeah.
I don't know he's saying his debt problem, it's going to be worse than 2008 because all of a sudden, how are we going to finance it if nobody shows up? or the interest rates are going to have to go up to a number we can't handle. I mean, in 1975 through 82, we didn't have that big of a, I'll probably can find it here. We did not need, let me go back as far as the national debt clock here will go, because they do have a date thing on here now. Let's see, where are we on the dates? But right now we have, our debt is 36. Next week, let's try and figure out why the debt is growing faster than the budget deficit would lead you to believe. Right now we're up almost $37 trillion, okay? And so the furthest we can go back on the time machine is 1980, which is okay. That's where we were. Our debt was $877 billion. So even though they were paying 12 to 14%, maybe even 15, it was on less than $1 trillion. So let's say they were paying 15%. That's $130 billion a year. Well, now, where are we? If we went back to 12% now, we'd be where? We'd be $4 trillion a year. It's more than the friggin' whatever, right?
Yeah.
But we had the room in those days to absorb something like that for a little while. Now we don't.
Well, all that means is what we've been doing, it's like Anton Jackson, played by, what was his name? Anton Jackson in Living Color.
Oh, I know. I don't know who the guy's name was, but...
Yeah. He's telling people he's homeless, and he's telling the judge that what he's been doing ain't paying so good. Well, what we've been doing for the last 20, 30 years is not working. We need to fix it. And what Democrats and Republicans and Democrats, this is a bipartisan effort. No matter how much they pretend to just hate the other side, this is their doing. And so we need some radical disruption to what's been going on for the last 20 years. And my thing is, you got to unrestrain the economy. You have to stop lifting the debt ceiling. And the Fed has just got to say to Congress, look, we're going to grow the money supply at 1%. And whatever you do is whatever you do. We're going to be completely independent. We're not going to worry about unemployment. We're not going to worry about GDP growth. We're just going to keep the money supply growing at a constant 1%, and that's it. And I think if we do those two things, because right now the Fed is the drug dealer.
Well, you can't we got a dash here, Al, but you can't let corporations charge people here an exorbitant amount of money for drugs and stuff and not even pay taxes here because they're overseas.
Well, you got to get rid of the cartelization of these industries.
Well, I'm saying you can't have the piggy move up on stocks where, I'm not saying the capital gain from 50 years ago should be 20%. I think it's too high. But you need to get rid of the obvious glitches. You need to get some of the corporations, especially overseas, paying taxes here. Yeah. And you got to let people, get rid of some of the cartels so people can do stuff on their own. I mean, I agree with you. You need to grow the economy, and you've got to get your tax base up, and you're not going to get it out of the regular people because they don't have it. Anyway, buddy, what do you guys got doing for Easter? Anything? Obviously, you're off Friday.
Well, the kids are on spring break this week.
Okay, so where are you guys going? Anywhere?
Well, I still have to work, and we're going to do a Easter egg hunt on Sunday, and we got an Easter egg hunt on Saturday, and then a neighbor invited us over for a barbecue on Sunday afternoon.
Are these fake eggs or real eggs?
Well, at the churches, they put candy inside of plastic eggs. They don't really color them anymore.
Why not?
Remember coloring eggs? The yolk would turn green.
That's only if it sat there a while. or if you boil it too long in the first place. That's why it would turn green.
Yeah, what's going on now is they just put candy inside of plastic.
So we can't even make a hard-boiled egg anymore. That's how bad we've got.
No, we can't, no. Well, you wouldn't want to do it that way anyway, because with all the millions of chickens that were killed over the last couple of years, it kind of pushed the price of eggs up, right?
Well, they're coming back down, but anyway, SP Futures.
It's cheaper to buy the plastic eggs than fill them with candy.
The idea that we're into plastic eggs, I can't even go there. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures. Audrey has her pals over on a Good Friday, and they color the eggs, and they all go and have a good time.
We'll probably watch the Passion of the Christ.
I'm sure they're talking about all the guys, too. That's what they, what the heck. They sit there and talk and have a couple of cocktails and cook. I liked it back when they had the really nasty stuff you colored them with, where they were all the oil based, where they wouldn't actually mix. Where you could take it and you could.
We never did oil based paint.
Well, the old stuff sat on top of the water. Didn't dissolve, so you could get all the colors up top, and you made these spectacular eggs. Now you color the water and put the egg.
Yeah,
it's this water based stuff. It's much better for
it. And it kind of soaks into the shell.
Yeah, well the old stuff. I mean, I guess you weren't supposed to eat it, but if you peeled it right, you didn't eat it. Just saying. Yeah. We survived, you know. Just saying.
Well, you know, boiled eggs are like popcorn to me. I have to be in the right kind of mood to eat a boiled egg or have popcorn. Most of the time, I can't stand.
Well, now you know what hard boiled eggs used to be referred to here in Chicago. Bar chicken, because every bar had
bar chicken.
Every bar that didn't have a kitchen had hard boiled eggs you could have if you were hungry.
Well, have you ever seen the pickled eggs in the jars?
Yeah, I never had those, but my grandfather liked those.
Those are pretty popular in Idaho. You go to a bar in Idaho, you're going to see a jar of pickled eggs.
Ricky, you ever heard that term? Hard boiled egg was bar chicken?
Never.
We'll see you. You learn something every day.
I know.
You had popcorn, peanuts, beer nuts, and bar chicken when you were a regular soda. Just saying. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures up 14. Maybe I started to go into a saloon too young. What can I tell you? I'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.